Good morning, Shalom Aleichem, everybody. Welcome back to Parsha to Go, Parsha's Miketz, and Freilich and Chanukah to everyone. We are in the fourth day, halfway point, 50-yard line of Chanukah itself. Very, very exciting point to be. Everyone's invited tonight to our home for a Chagiga. Yaakov, 8 o'clock. 8 o'clock tonight at our home. Look forward to seeing you there. The unfolding of and the drama of the entire story of Yosef and the brothers really picks up pace in our parsha. Yosef, we find Yosef last week to this week languishing away in jail and then being elevated upon the dreams, the two dreams that Paro has, the dreams about the wheat and the dreams about the sheaves and the dreams about the cows. Yosef tells him prophetically there are going to be seven good years and followed by seven bad years. Yosef then appointed to viceroy of all of Egypt and upon this worldwide famine, right? It's amazing. Egypt was the superpower. What's Egypt today? Right? What does Egypt provide to the world today besides for great, the great tourist attraction? Yeah. I have a day. I would love to go visit Egypt to see all of those sites. Maybe we'll do a Shomei Torah Netev trip to Egypt one of these days. Fascinating. But what back then, right? But back then, it was the world superpower. Everybody went there to gather to get their food, and that was due to Yosef's wisdom and intellect. The brothers come in, they go back, they go forth. We'll talk about different aspects of that, and ultimately, the parsha is left itself on a cliffhanger with Binyamin being taken into jail and the brothers being sent away. Yehuda steps up to the plate, and that's where we find ourselves. So let's take parts of the parsha and really analyze them and try to glean from them very important life lessons. The Torah tells us when Paro has his dream regarding the sheaves. Vativlana hashibolim hadakos, es hasheva hashibolim habrios vamleos. Paro says, the second dream, the seven sheaves that are very, very thin and frail eat up, swallow up the full and plenty and healthy seven sheaves. Vayikatz Paro, vihine chalom. Paro wakes up and, that was a dream, vihine chalom. The Mefarshim are troubled. Why was that necessary? Why does the Torah need to tell us v'hinei chalom, that this was a dream? The Torah does not say this by the first one. By the dream of the cow, the Torah just says, Vayikatz Paro, Paro woke up after the dream was over. What's Vayikatz Paro? V'hinei chalom. That's Pasuk Dalid versus Pasuk Ches. V'hinei chalom. So what is the Torah telling us by saying, this was a dream? So says Rabbeinu Bachya on the spot, Hayalo lomar vihine chalomos. The Torah should have told you this now wasn't one dream, but there are two dreams. Chaloma paros v'chaloma shibolim. Aval amar chalom. Shehu ba'atzmo haya makir kishneim inyan echad. Avalo haya yodea pitronam. So Rabbeinu Bachya says, Vihine Chalom is not going on just the one immediate dream that he had. It's going on both dreams. And the Torah is telling us, Vihine Chalom, that Paro intuited that these weren't two separate messages. It was really, there's one succinct, unified message brought out by the Paros and the Shibolim together. That's why Vihine Chalom comes after the second dream, to highlight that. What? That's right. So that's important for us to know that that's part of the chachma of Yosef. That Yosef was able to intuit, understand, it was from a Kaddish Baruch Hu, that's Yosef said, that this was, he understood it was one, chalom echad. But this is maybe where it comes from. Paro left off some details, and this is maybe one of them that was not expressed. The Chizkuni writes something a little bit different. He says that the first dream, maybe it wasn't really a dream. The cows. Maybe it could, not that I don't think it he means that it really wasn't a dream, but cows could physically eat each other. Animals do eat one another. That could happen where, I know, cows are not carnivores. Okay, this is the Chizkuni writes. That could theoretically happen. L'fisha pa'amim shayach shebehemos ochlo zu et zu. Ava b'shibolim, but sheaves, that can never happen. Lo shayach l'markein. L'ficha chasa behem v'hine echalom. V'adai mara zeh ena chalom. So he understood this for sure was not just a dream, but this meant something deeper. This wasn't something maybe that was going to happen in reality, that the cows would go crazy in the land of Egypt, but it meant something deeper. Once he had the dream of the Shibolim, it meant that something deeper was going to happen over here. That's the Rabbeinu Bachya writes, it's two dreams together. That's how we know. And Chizkuni writes that the first dream could theoretically happen, and the second one didn't.
Is it the simple shot, though, that when you sing the Dinei Chalom, that if you have a dream, then you go back to sleep, and you have a dream along the same message,
yeah,
you say, wow, Dinei Chalom, this is a dream to be reckoned with, and I have to get someone to interpret it.
Yeah, so that's about Ramban. Yeah. Ramban says, V'fidati yirmoz ki amad al mitaso, mikitz, machshev b'chalomo. Like he woke up and he's like in the middle of the night, and what's going on here? There must be something going on. And he went back to sleep. Maybe there's going to be a third message in the dreams. There wasn't a third message in the dreams. And now he said, oh, I need to find out what is going on. Yes. Right, so that would affect them directly versus the cows. Like they worship cows too?
So all animals.
All animals, okay. Yeah, very interesting. Yeah. The Ksava Kabbalah and Achida. The Ksava Kabbalah was Rav Yaakov Tzvi Metlingberg, who was a linguist. He was an expert in language himself. He was a contemporary of Rav Hirsch. Him and Rav Hirsch, Ksava Kabbalah and Rav Hirsch, were both people, figures, that were addressing the reform movement that was sweeping across Europe. So they sought to express the how the Torah is Torah Hashem, and every single word is carefully designed to be there. This wasn't by accident. The Torah is divine. So he writes here, he asks another question. It says, so Yosef is, you know, brought out of jail, and he goes to before Paro, the most powerful man in the world, and he tells him his dreams. So Yosef doesn't only interpret the dreams. What else does he do? He tells him what to do. So Ksava Kabbalah says, not just chutzpah, but that's dangerous. You're going to tell the most powerful and scary, you know, man in the world what to do? That's not a good idea. Who are you? If he asks for your advice now, go ahead and do it. So Paro was bewildered, therefore he's allowed to. So, yeah, go ahead.
So I think why not? Bottom line is, Paro had a few people's greatest nations in the world, had the most brilliant advisors in the world with him, and none of them completely dissent.
Right.
I mean, he must have consulted with them first, and they were totally bewildered and didn't know what was going to do, what was happening here. So why not? If he was the person that stood out, why not give a solution as well?
Okay, fair point. The Ksav Kabbalah says like this. He's Oru HaMefarshim. Me Nasan es Yosef Liyosi Yowetz Lamelech. Who said, who made Yosef king? Who made Yosef the advisor to the king? Ki lo nikra. Rak liftuar chalom. He was only called up to do his job. Do your job. And then if you're asked again, then follow through. Follow through. Nir lish inzu eitza midato al gam zehu lepitaron. This is not advice. It was in the dream itself. That's why Yosef was able to say it to Paro and not get in trouble. Why? Midihiskir besof chalom harishon vayikatz Paro v'chein beparo b'sifro chalomo liyosef hiskir besof chalom harishon va'akitz. In both dreams, part of the dream was that he woke up. Right? The Torah doesn't need to tell us that he woke up. Like, obviously, he had a dream, he woke up. Why is the Torah telling us that? That clearly that was part of the dream, that he woke up. That the way that he told over the dream, but this is part of it, I woke up. So Yosef says, oh, from there, part of the solution or the interpretation of the dream is the waking up part on the behalf of the head of the country. And what does that mean? Advice as to what to do as a result of these two dreams that came one after the other. In fact, the Chida is at the opposite spectrum of the Ksav HaKabbalah, who's he's very careful about the language of the Chida. Was a Sephardi Mekubbo, and he traveled all over the world, and he has the same question, and he says that Vayakitz Paro Vehine Chalom was that Paro in his dream woke up. He dreamt himself of waking up from the dream, which we do sometimes, right? And then he woke up. Meaning that part of the dream was that he woke up. And therefore, part of the interpretation is how is power going to wake up to this advice? That's where Rav Mecklenburg, Ksav HaKabbalah, and the Chida, in two different ways, say essentially the same idea as to why this was necessary to be said and what was going on over here. Okay, so that is the first approach, first thought for today. A different approach as to what it means when the Torah says, "Vayakitz paro vihine chalom." Why was that necessary? And fascinating different interpretations as to what was going on over here. A big discussion, and if you see Dr. Bichler in Shul the Shabbos, Halavai should be well. Maybe he's by his kids. But he will tell you that this pasuk bothers him every year. Vayaker Yosef es echav vehem halohi hikiru. Yosef's recognized the brothers, and the brothers didn't recognize. Now you can ask this question 100 different. Like, what does this mean? They recognize. How could it be they didn't recognize him? So what? 22 years passed, and they don't recognize him. That's.
Because he was out of context.
Like today, you see somebody in a supermarket that like you went to high school with, out of context. So it's like hard, you're thrown off a little bit.
You don't
want to believe it. Right? So that's Rabbi Dr. Tursky says that a lot about a lot of things, and here too, that this is, they don't want to believe that he was alive because that means the ruse is up. You know, they were caught. They'd be found out. So denial is not just a river in Egypt, but it's a part of our psyche. You know, in terms of, so the Torah tells us in last week's parsha that Yaakov and Yosef looked alike. And that just adds to it, that Yosef looked like Yaakov. Ela told us Yaakov, Yosef. So they looked alike. So Rashi tells us that he when he left, he didn't have Gidul Zakan, and now he has Gidul Zakan. So most Mefarshim understand that to mean that he didn't have a beard, and now he does have a beard. And that's what that facial wreck was not there for the brothers. Dr. Bichler likes to say the opposite. If you look historically, if you look at pictures of ancient Egypt, Egyptians did not have beards. They maybe had long hair coming out of their head and different types of things. They didn't have long beards. So he argues that Gidul Zakan just means that the Bnei Yaakov, Jews, didn't shave. So they had beards. So now when he went, Chatib Matzakan is the sign of a beard. Didn't mean whether you have one or not. When he went to Egypt, to fit in with society, he had to shave. And that's notable when Yossi's pulled out of jail. What do you have to do first?
Shave.
You have to shave and get new clothing on. So that's Dr. Bickler's thought in terms of here. The Ramban says something fascinating. The Ramban writes is that Yosef, when the brothers came in, Yosef covered his head. Like he wore a hat and he lowered it down to cover part of his face. And that was a way where he was able to like be a little bit masked in hiding. And I don't think it was a black hat. I don't know what it was, but he wore some, but we could appreciate this today. How often you go to the supermarket, you see somebody at a simcha and you're like, half their face is covered and you could barely figure out who they were, who they are. And this is directly related to the Ramban. The Ramban over here, that this was able to conceal Yosef at this time. Yes.
How come there were no rumors that the current leader of Egypt is he was taken out of prison became the leader because he interpreted the dreams the right way? You would think a rumor like that would spread over the whole world.
I hear you. Yeah. I don't know if Paro wanted that rumor to be spread.
So in the process that Paro had a discussion.
Paro did change his name to a very Egyptian name, Safnas Paneach. So it could be that that was not spread. They didn't want that to be known to everybody else. Okay. This is fascinating. I have just a half a thought here. But is anyone, is that a question?
Rabbi?
Yes.
It's not that unusual. Number one is so many years later, but it's out of context. It never would appear to them that this kid who they threw into a pit years ago would suddenly be the... So if
That's denial. That's denial. That's denial is a real thing. Denial is real. Like we face something or we assume that somebody can never be who they actually do become. And it's a very scary thing that we all have that about ourselves. And it's hard for us to own that and to recognize sometimes that we're in such denial about our lives, right? It's who gets us out of denial, right? We need a good spouse. We need a good friend. We need sometimes a child to get us. A child can say, make a comment sometimes that can wake us up. And that's very, very important. So Yosef meets up with the brothers. He throws Shimon in jail and sends the brothers away. He accused them as being spies. And he says, you can only come back with Binyamin. Yaakov waits. It's not clear how long they wait. Yaakov doesn't want to go back. Reuven first makes an attempt. I'll kill my own two children if you bring back. That's for a different time as to how that is and why that is what he makes. Eventually, the brothers do need to go back. It seems like the pantries were getting dry, we're getting empty, and they do need to go back. So Yaakov says, when you go back now, don't go back empty-handed. Don't go back empty-handed. You need to take kichu mizimras aris. You're going to look on inside. It's mem gimel yud aleph. Mem gimel yud aleph. Vayomer aleihem Yisrael avihem. Yaakov tells the sons, imkin efo zos asu. If you're going to have to go, like it must be so, then bring with you Zosasu kichu mizimras aretz bichleichem. Take from the land glory, is how article translates it. Behoridu ish mincha me'at tzari u'ma'at vash nechot valot botnim u'shkedim. Take with you a bit of balsam, some honey, wax, lotus, pistachios, and almonds. The kesef mishneh. And take back double the amount of money in your hands that he put into your sacks, because we don't want to keep that money. We don't want to get into any more trouble. So he brings all these things. Just before we get into exactly what is Yaakov asking to do, these don't seem like such elaborate and beautiful things. Like if you were, I don't know, gold, silver, you know, take some of our jewelry. If we're asking for a promise or a bribe that I for sure want Shimon back and I don't want you to take Binyamin, I'm so nervous, there should be things that maybe are of a little bit more of expensive nature. But what was what's fascinating is that when Yosef is sold, he sold into a caravan. What was that? What was in that caravan? So the Torah tells us, "Vehine orchos Yishmael and Bam Megilat Gmalayim Nosim Nechot Utsri Velot." It is two of the things that Yaakov asked to take to them to bring back Nechot Velot. Okay, so you see, on a simple level, what we do see is that these were things that were transported to Egypt. Commodities that Egypt needed, because if they were bringing them from Israel to Egypt then, and for sure now they're going to be needed too. They weren't indigenous to the land of Egypt. But maybe somehow prophetically, or we call it Hashkacha Pratis, that these were Dafka, the gifts that that were brought to Yosef, as somehow some Zecher to the sale of Yosef. I don't know, just a thought. But now, why did Yaakov ask to bring these gifts specifically? So, the Birchas Asher Al HaTorah, who I do not know who that is, I saw it in the Sfaria. He writes that this is similar and typical to Yaakov's MO in general. When Yaakov's facing an impending enemy, what does he do? He prepares in three ways: Tfila, Milchama, and Doron. When he prepared to meet up with Esav, he prepared in three ways. So to hear, he's giving gifts to the enemy. That is one thing you need to do to prepare the right way. You try to bribe them. Likutei Maharan, Rav Nachman, says something very, very beautiful here about Eretz Yisrael. Ki Yaakov Avinu kisheshalach hezbanav aseret hashvatam liyosef. Shalach imahem, what did he send with them? Zimras aretz, which means the fruits of the land. But zemer, Zemer means a song. Shalach imahem nigun shel Eretz Yisrael. He sent with them the songs of Israel. Doesn't mean he sent with them Naomi Shemer. And no, what does that mean? He said nigun. The beauty that every, he says that every blade of grass in Eretz Yisrael has a nigun miyuchan. Shalach al yadam. He sent them the beauty of Eretz Yisrael. That was the goal here. And he writes that every single piece of blade of grass in Eretz Yisrael sings its own song. It's beautiful. That's the Sforno, and this is related to Hanukkah. The Sforno writes, Ki omnam ha-mincha she-tuval le-ish nivhal lahon yitzarech she-tiei rabas ha-kamos la-zbiya ayin mizeh ha-min ha-isa minchas Yaakov. Gifts that we give should be thoughtful to the recipient. You should give something to somebody that is given thought, that's meaningful. So he dafka chose items, these weren't random, that he felt that the viceroy of Egypt in his position would find useful and meaningful. Which is fascinating, right? So whether you give gifts or not, you still keep Hanukkah, whether you got a gift, you didn't give a gift, you're Yotze. But when we give gifts on Hanukkah, the Sforno is telling us, the gifts should be thoughtful. They should be meaningful. You know, I'm not the biggest fan of gifts because it's unclear where the source comes from. So my kids do get gifts. But when they do, they should be a little bit, you know, not what the latest trend is or what they want the most. Maybe it should be also thoughtful. And that's what the Sforno got it over here, because that really tugs at somebody's heart, and then you know somebody is really thinking of that. So, yeah.
What was Yaakov's mindset here, knowing that what did he think? I mean, he had to have some thought, just to think we could bribe them by sending him these things. It doesn't seem to be somebody in Yaakov's position would be thinking. There had to be an underlying thought there.
as to why Binyamin was being sent down.
Why was Binyamin asked to come down?
That was their way. So Yaakov says to them, what do the brothers say? The brothers originally say, we're really Kulana, we're come from one man. We're, 11 brothers. One of our brothers died. And one of our brothers, and he says, okay, that's so true. Where's he? Well, he's home with Abba. So if you want to prove to me, right, that you're really telling the truth, bring him with you.
So just a matter to believe that.
So Yaakov says to them, you should have lied to him. Like, why are you telling the truth? Why do you need to not lie, but why would you even need to say this? Because the brother, he says you're spies. What do the brothers say? Not spies. What if we would be spies, why would the Mossad send down 10 brothers that look relatively similar, that are similar ages, and all come into the country together? That would make no sense. So Yosef says, Rechaim Kanevsky reads it this way. Yosef says, no, that's exactly why. Like, your excuse is the reason why you guys would be good spies. Because you get it under the radar. It looks like a family trip. It looks like a family excavation to try to find some food. And that's why you're getting in. So you want to prove that really what you're saying is really true and authentic and real, then bring Binyamin with you.
I still think, especially he sent the spices down that were on the original caravan. If it was someone, I would think they would still have hope that maybe Yosef is alive. I mean, and he was never able to ever get over it either. So why couldn't he kind of connect the dots?
Yeah.
Say, even though it's a million to one shot, maybe this is Yosef.
So therefore what? Therefore Yaakov should have gone down with them? Then what would happen?
Why play these games? But, I would, if it was me, I would get onto my horse.
And go.
And go with my son.
So we'll learn in next week. Yaakov's not a young man. It's not a one-day journey. It's a six-day journey, Chazal say. It would take 6 days to get from Eretz Israel to Egypt.
The game, I just don't understand Yaakov's thought process.
Yeah. Sometimes it's a shkacha pratis that causes us sometimes to make decisions that are against, we can look at this hindsight 2020, obviously, in the story of Yaakov and brothers. Rabbi Forman says, this is the first time Rabbi Forman writes, we see God's perspective through the story, right? And so we're able to know, maybe this is part of Yosef, pushing this story along to get to Egypt when a regular father maybe wouldn't make that decision, and Yaakov in a good day wouldn't make that decision, but Akash Baruch Hu compelled him to get
Yaakov
there.
Yaakov also learned that eventually he would go down to the triumph anyway, right? But that
was the plan. That was the plan.
I just hope that you said the first place to check
Yeah. Okay, last thought for today comes from the end of the parasha. So Yosef sends somebody to plant the gevia. The cup, Yosef's cup, in the sack of Binyamin. Why was that necessary? Was it really necessary to plant it in Binyamin's sack? Why couldn't they plant it in one of the other brothers'
sacks? It makes sense. Yeah. Because eventually he wants to see if they're treating him the same way they treated him, or they come to the rescue for him. The whole idea, it has to be Binyamin. The whole idea was to see if the brothers show love for him and basically won't desert him.
So fascinating. Yeah, go ahead. What were you saying? So this is full tshuva. So the Sforno writes, L'ros ech yimasru atzmam alav kedei latzi. This is the main point. Yosef really needs to see whether the brothers did tshuva. This is our Persh's whole reading of the whole story. That Yosef is trying to get the brothers to tshuva. He's not like a maniac. He's not like trying to punish them. He wants to get them to do tshuva. And the Sforno says, are they willing to sacrifice themselves? and go to bat for their brother, just like they did in for him. The Chizkuni takes a different approach. It's fascinating. So Yosef doesn't really know what Binyamin looks like. So what could the brothers have done? What? They could have got somebody from the shul. Right? The Gemara, someone's having a great time. I'm happy. Okay, so they could have got somebody from the shuk, which is called an asufi, a random, you know, somebody, whatever, that's someone's being sold into slavery.
A ringer.
And how would Yosef know this is really Binyamin? The whole thing could have been, and would have been a good move. Would have been a very smart move. We're talking about sending Binyamin, maybe this would have been the better move. Send a random guy. So how would Yosef know for sure that they actually sent Binyamin? This really is Binyamin.
Yosef is in such a great, powerful position right now, and he is that wise Israel of Egypt. It seems like he has Egypt knowledge and wisdom. Somehow he knows this is his problem.
Yeah. So he writes,
a great risk to the brothers.
If they brought someone fake, then it would be a great risk to the brothers. Yeah. So maybe the brothers don't care. You know, maybe the brothers. So he says he Dafka planted it in Yamin's cup for this purpose. And what happens when the brothers see that? They found it in Yamin's cup. Vayikru simlosam. A son of Avelis. Ve'amos ish al-chamaro. Ve'ashuv ha'ira. They each go, like, they know what's going to happen. They realize what's happening. They pack up their stuff and they go back to Egypt. They don't even say a word. They don't complain. They don't stay. Because they know. That's it. What's going to happen? Like, they're so at a loss for words. Rabbeinu Bachya fills in the blank over here. And they start making fun of Binyamin. And they say, Binyamin, you're just like your mother.
Oh.
Why just like your mother?
She
stole the drachim. Right? And because of that, Binyamin at this moment is granted Ubein Ktefav Shachem. He gets Yerushalayim, to be part of Yerushalayim, to be in his portion. And then when the Torah says V'yikru Simlosam, Rabbeinu Bachya continues, that he tore his clothing too. It wasn't that him. He tore, because he knew he didn't do it. So he said, this is really, really bad. My father, forget about it. Vayikru simlosam. And therefore he was zocha that Mordechai Hatzadik would come out of him. Vayikra Mordechai as bigadav. Mordechai tears his clothing. And third, the Medrash tells us here that Menashe, even though he was listening to his father, Menashe gets punished as a result of this. It's a consequence of Menashe. Menashe's portion gets ripped apart from him. Where he was never part, all the way in Parshat Matos, right? Reuven and Gad come to Moshe and say, we want portion on the other side of the river. Menashe never does. But at some point in these deliberations, they're added in. Chatzi Sheva Menashe. So Chazal say it's because of this. Vayikru Simlosav. Because he caused his brothers to tear their garments, so therefore his portion is going to be split in half as well. Yeah.
So the story shows that it seems that the people that come out of the Yamin are far greater than the people that are coming out of Yosef. Because we saw that the tribes of Menashe are trying to catch the things that were going on.
And the first Melech is Shaul.
Right, we see greatness from Yosef. Right.
We definitely see a tremendous disproportionate leadership from Yosef's, from Rachel's children in the entire city of Shoftim relative to everybody else. We definitely see that as well. Yeah, for sure.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
If Menashe is just following what his father is telling him, he's showing covet for his father, why is he being punished? He did exactly what Yosef asked him to do.
It's a great question, but ultimately we're responsible for the actions that we take. We're compelled, not compelled, but even if we do them, we're responsible for them. Okay, so today we discussed four different questions. Number one is, why Vayikatz Paro V'hineh Chalom, the wild, amazing interpretation of the Chida? Why did Yosef give the advice? Why did he say that by the second dream? Second, why was Yosef hidden for them? The Nile is not just a river in Egypt. The significance of the gifts that Yaakov sent may be related to the spices that were sent down with Yosef in the caravan. And why did Yosef plant the cup in Binyamin's sack? I wish everybody a Freilich and Chanukah and a great Shabbos.
Shkach, Rabbi.
I think this is going to